We're holding on Lamed Tes Amud Aleph, the Mishnah. Mishnah says, Shor shel pikeach shenagach shor shel cheresh shtoy to bekatan. If an ox belonging to a pikeach, a normal person, gored an ox belonging to a cheresh shtoy to bekatan, chayev. So then the person, the owner of the mazik animal, is chayev in the usual way. Chatzi nezek for a tam, or nezek shalim for a muad. Some Mefarshim say that this is just there's no chiddush in this, and this is just an introduction to the next part of the Mishnah. Others point out that there is a chiddush in it because you could say that you know, shouldn't you think that maybe the owner of the shur that was the nizik, the one that was damaged, has a certain degree of responsibility to make sure that his shur is in a safe place, and he or the cheresh shur to be cut and don't do that, and we're saying that still that doesn't matter, and no, the mazik is still chayim. Anyway, if it was the other way around, an ox belonging to a cheresh shoyt v'katan, gored an ox belonging to a pikeach, potter, then the owner of the mazik ox is potter, because he's not a ben das, so he's not a ben das. Now the Gemara is going to explain that there's a difference in this regard between a tam and a muad, because what happens is, when it comes, as we've been learning throughout the Masechta, when it comes to a tam, besides that there's tam versus nezek is chatzin nezek, tam versus muad is chatzin nezek versus nezek shalem, there's also the difference, as we've been learning throughout, that a tam, you pay only migufa, it's only from the body of the shirt itself that the payment is made. We even had the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, which is the halacha, that the two of them are considered that the two of them are considered partners in this ox, or even that the nizik gets all of it if the ox is worth only exactly as much as the chatzin nizik, whatever. So therefore, it's metaltlin, and metaltlin, Rashi points out, you don't take away from yisoimim. In this case, we're talking a cotton over here, so therefore he's a yosim. And similar ideas would be the cheresh and shoyta. We're not going to take away metaltlin from them, and therefore we're not even going to set up an apotropos, a trustee or a guardian to deal with that, because we don't do it at all. The only thing that Beis Din is going to collect from Yisoimim, as we're going to see in the Gemara, is land, and by a tam, there's no payment in land because you're only paying migufay. So therefore, by a tam, they would be completely potter. By a muad, we'll see later on in the Mishnah, and we'll see in the Gemara. So Rashi makes that point. Rashi also makes the point that you could also, we've learned earlier in the Masechta, we're going to learn later on in this parak, the question of what is the nature of the chatzin nezek that we're saying that's paid. Actually, we discussed it primarily at the end of the first parak. When we say that a tam pays chatzin nezek, is that fundamentally mamon or knas, in the sense that is it that really he ought to have been completely potter and the Torah is penalizing him and making him pay half, or the other way around, really he should have been chayev the whole thing, and the Torah is giving him a break and reducing it to half? If we say that it's a knas, then there's also yisoimim you don't do a knas for, because they're not bnei das. Rashi though doesn't like that explanation for a couple of reasons. Tosfos also brings that explanation and doesn't like it either. However, the Raiva does learn that way. Anyway, so therefore, when we say potter, what we mean is they're potter from. What we mean is they're potter. There's not going to be any payment at all when their ox is a tam and it causes damage. So the Mishnah continues. Shor shel cheresh shoyt v'katan shenagach. When a shor belonging to a cheresh shoyt v'katan gores, based in ma'amidin lahen apotropos, then based in sets up an apotropos. Now, it sounds, and they testify in front of the apotropos. Now, on the face of it, that sounds like it means that we're testifying in order to collect chatzin nezek, which the Gemara is going to point out that contradicts what we just said, that they're potter. So the Gemara is going to end up explaining that it means that the purpose of the apotropos is, his job is going to be to watch that shur and to make sure that it doesn't become muad. And the testimony in front of him is going to be for the purpose that if this keeps on happening, the animal will become a muad, and eventually nezek shalom will have to be paid, but not to collect chatzin nezek, because the Mishnah already told us that you don't collect chatzin nezek from cheresh shur to the cotton. But we'll see all those details. We'll see all those details in the Gemara. Anyway, continues the Mishnah, nishtapa hashoita. What happens if the what happens if the shoita now becomes normal again? So so now he's not a shoita anymore. Now he has now he's a ben das like anybody else. But actually, I skipped the words. Nispakeach acheresh. If the cheresh now became normal, or a cheresh, keep in mind in terminology of halacha, most of the time a cheresh is somebody who can't speak and can't hear. So it could be that he was born congenitally deaf or became deaf at a very young age and never learned to speak. You could have where later on he had a stroke or something and lost his power of hearing and his power of speech. Now you're talking about where he becomes normal again and he's able to. There is, by the way, discussion among Achronim beginning from the Divrei Chaim and going on to our times nowadays, where it happens that even somebody who was born congenitally deaf can be taught to communicate. He can be taught sign language. Sometimes even they can be taught to actually speak and said and so forth. Do they still have the din of the cheresh that we're discussing over here? And in fact, the consensus of many poskim is that they do not. Anyway, so nispakeach acheresh, nishtapa ha-shoita, if the shoita became normal, v'higdil ha-katan, or the katan grew up, Chozo Tamusa Divrei Reb Meir. Then Reb Meir says, "Now, up until now, this ox has been under the control, under the guardianship of the apotropos. Now that it goes back to being owned by the person himself, then it goes back to being tam. This is called reshus mishana. This is called that the change of reshus of the animal causes a change in its din. It goes back from being moored to being tam. We'll talk about it a little bit in the Gemara today. We're going to talk about it in more detail in the Gemara tomorrow. That's the shame. Anyway, so Divrei Meir, Rabbi Yosi Yoma Hareu Bechaskoser. Rabbi Yosi says that no, the animal remains in its original chazaka, meaning it was already a moored. It became a moored by being warned a number of times in the presence of the apotropos. So now, even though it goes back to the actual owner, it doesn't go back to being a tam. We're going to see in the Gemara this whole matter of Rishus Mishana. In the end, the halacha is going to be that, yes, Rishus Mishana. Nevertheless, in this particular case, the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi, because the Rambam explains, because basically here it's still in the same Rishus after all. Temporarily, the apotropos is taking care of it, but fundamentally it does belong to the Cheresh Shoyt of a Katan, and therefore it hasn't really changed Rishus. This that we're saying, by the way, that Rishus Mishana, I mean, again, we'll talk about it in more detail in the Gemara, but there's a couple of explanations among Rishonim what the mechanism is behind it. Is it because it's a technical matter? Because for it to become a muad, there has to have been a warning in front of the balabais, in front of the owner of the shur several times, and now that warning can't be transferred from one person to another. That's how Rashi learns. And then you have the Meiri gives an explanation, and so do a few other Rishonim say similar things, that when you have when it changes Rishus, that's likely to have a natural effect on the shur that now it's not as wild. The same way as we learned before, for example, that a shur may perceive the difference between Shabbos and weekdays and similar things like that. The same way the shur may perceive that there's a difference in its change of ownership now. There was an interesting sikha in Chelek Lamed Vav where the Rebbe analyzes all of this in terms of Avodah, that you have different ways of keeping your Yetzer Hara, which is like an ox in control. Do we say, I mean, the ideal is that we learned earlier in the Masechta that the shur now becomes so docile that even we said children can be playing with it and it won't gore. That would represent somebody who's completely transformed as Yetzer Hara, min ha-kotze el ha-kotze. Then you have this that we're saying over here about selling or transferring it, this shinu reshus. You have two ways of looking at it. Is it that basically the shinu reshus overlays on top of it when a person, in other words, is saying, I'm putting myself into the reshus of Hashem, I haven't yet completely conquered my Yetzer Hara, but I'm recognizing that I'm under Hashem's reshus, and that itself should help keep my Yetzer Hara in check. Is it that we say that the Yetzer Hara is still just as powerful as before? It's just kind of been overridden by the fact that now there's a different ownership, which is similar to Rashi's understanding of how Shinu Rishus makes a difference versus, according to the Meiri's explanation, that itself actually transforms the Yetzer Hara, transforms that Nefesh Bahamas into something on a higher level. All right, anyway, but that's, you know, and again, in the Gemara, we're going to deal more with this whole matter of Shinu Rishus. Continues the Mishnah, shor ha'itzdadin, a shor that's used in a stadium. So like, for example, for bullfighting. So this shor is being meant, it's being trained and taught to gore. So then ein chayav misa. So if it kills somebody, it's not chayav misa, even though normally, as we're going to learn in the rest of this parak, a shor that kills a person is usually chayav misa, as it says in the psukim, but here it's not. As the pasuk says, when it gores, implying that it gores on its own, not that they make it gore. So then it would be potter. You have a machlokas who's showing him whether that applies to whether that applies to anybody, if it gores anybody even outside the stadium, or does it apply even, or does it apply only within the stadium, or does it apply even outside of it? In fact, when the Rambam brings this halacha, the Raivad disagrees with it, although he doesn't specify exactly what his objection is. And then one way of understanding the Raivad's objection is just that the Rambam seems to be implying that he's potter regardless, and the Raivad is saying only if it was within the stadium or at the time when it was provoked by the red tape or whatever, etc. All right. So the Gemara says that in the Mishnah, again, so we have the beginning of the Mishnah says that if a cheresh shor to a cotton's ox gores, then we said it's potter. And on the other hand, then the Mishnah continued that we set up an apotropos. So the Gemara says, hogufa kasha. So you have a contradiction within the Mishnah. Amrit shor shor cheresh shor to a cotton, shor nogach shor shor pekeach potter. First, you're saying that the cheresh shor to a cotton would be potter. Alma ein ma'amin apotropos, the tam ligbus migufoi. Implying that we do not appoint an apotropos as far as a tam to be able to collect from gufoi, to be able to collect from the actual value of the ox itself. Ema sefer, but then the Mishnah continues, shor shocher shor to a cotton, shenogach, that if it gores, based in ma'amidin lahem apotropos, that based in does set up an apotropos, or ma'idin lahem bifne apotropos, and then the edus is given in front of the apotropos. Now, on the face of it, what is that edus for? Bepashtus, to testify that the event happened, and therefore that they should have to pay chatzi nezek. Alma ma'amidin lahem apotropos latam ligbus megufoi. So it sounds like we do set up an apotropos for that purpose. Now, Tosfos points out, I mean, the Gemara could have given the answer that the Reisha is talking about when there wasn't an apotropos at the time, and therefore we're pattering them, and now we're saying later on, now for the future, based in sets up an apotropos, and the next time it happens, then they give edus in front of the apotropos. Tosfos says, though, that no, because that would be something very poshut, so there'd be no reason for the Mishnah to have to mention that point. So what does the Mishnah mean? What the Mishnah means is, what it means is, if we have a chazakah that this ox is regularly goring, in other words, we're not even talking about, Tosfos says, we don't even mean necessarily that the ox has already gored. What we mean is that we see that this ox is going crazy, and we see it's likely to be goring in the near future. So then Beistin will appoint an apotropos, and from now on the edus will be given in front of it, not to make him chayev as a tam. That we still have what the Mishnah is saying, that you don't collect chatzi nezek, you don't collect the nezek for a tam from a cheresh shor to a cotton. The purpose of that apotropos is to warn each time. The purpose of it is to make the animal muad, because if they testify enough times about it, then the animal is going to become a muad. And that way, if the animal in the future continues to gore, then they will pay min ha'aliyah. They'll pay out of their regular assets rather than migufoi like you do for a tam. Usually the rule is that you need the repeated warnings for the animal to become a muad are in front of the owner here, where the owner himself is not available, then instead the apotropos steps in and fills that role. So that's what the apotropos accomplishes. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Me alias man." Now you're telling me that. So you're telling me that eventually you're going to be paying min ha'aliyah. So eventually we're saying that if the animal continues. So in other words, in short, what we're saying is like this: the animal belongs to a cheresh shor to a cotton. the first time. So let's say, for example, we're able to know proactively before the first time that it gores. Like, for example, Tosfos says we see the animal is already starting to go crazy, and we realize in the near future it's likely to gore. So then, based on, we'll set up an apotropos. If it gores the first time, we warn the apotropos that this animal is dangerous and he needs to watch it better, and we don't collect anything from the assets from the shirt itself. Second time, same thing. Third time, same thing. After that, each time we've warned it, now it becomes a mord. Now we're going to be paid. Now we're going to be getting nezek shalim for the fourth nezek and onward. And that's the purpose of the apotropos was to make it that those warnings can be given, and that way eventually you're paying nezek shalim. Okay. So the Gemara says now we said that when once it's a mord, then we switch over to paying me'aliyah. The question is me'aliyah's man. Whose aliyah are we paying from? Do we take it from the nechassim of the yesomim, or do we take it from the nechassim of the apotropos? You could look at it either way. I mean, on the one hand, the shor belongs to the yesomim. On the other hand, the apotropos is responsible for watching the animal. So you could look at it either way. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan Omar me'aliyas yisomim, Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina Omar me'aliyas apotropos. So you have machlokas. Rabbi Yochanan says you take it from the property of the yisomim, and Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina says you take it from the apotropos. The Pnei Yeshua points out actually that here the Gemara is specifically using the word yisomim, not like till now we were saying cheresh straight of a cotton, because further on the Gemara is going to explain what the reason behind the machlokas is. That even if we say we collect from the apotropos, we're going to say eventually he's going to be able to collect from the yesomim. Now, in the case of yesomim, that will work because eventually they're going to grow up. He'll be able to collect from them. The cheresh and the shoita may never become normal, and therefore he may not be willing to take on that responsibility of being an apotropos in the first place, knowing that he's going to be on the hook for paying for the nezakin if the animal becomes a mord, and not necessarily have any recourse, because not necessarily is the cheresh going to recover or the shoita going to recover. So the Pnei Yeshua points out that's why the Gemara over here uses the word yesomim. With that said, though,
he probably gets paid for doing the job also, because why would someone take a job and be responsible?
Well, there is a difference, actually. We did learn in Gittin, it's one thing when he's set up as an apotropos to, in general, to oversee everything involving the yesomim, then yes, he's entitled to be paid for that. And we learned there that he has an expense account, for example, that he can get himself, for example, nice clothing out of their assets, in order that when he goes to transact business on their behalf, people will listen to him. Here, it's an apotropos for a very narrow purpose, just in order to watch the shur and prevent it from causing damage. Is he going to get paid for that? Maybe, but not necessarily. So the Pnei Yeshua again draws that distinction between Yisoyimim and the other kinds. With that said, though, the Yafei Naim brings up the Yerushalmi, says that said when it explains Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina's opinion, it says that no, the apotropos is not going to. When we say over here that Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina is saying you collect from the apotropos, the Yerushalmi learns in his opinion that he wouldn't be able to collect from the Yisoyimim. So then, in that case, there's not really a difference between Yisoyimim versus a cheresh and a shoita. Anyway, so the Gemara says, "Omi Amar Rabbi Yochanan Hachi." Did Rabbi Yochanan indeed say that you collect from the property of the yesomim? Again, in this case, where the animal has become a mord by having the apotropos warned several times. The Amar of Yehuda, Amar of Asi, Ein Niskokin L'Nichsi Yesomim. We never, Beisdin never gets involved as far as the property of Yesomim to collect anything from them. Elim Kin Ribus Echelas Behen, unless Ribus is eating away at it, meaning that their father had borrowed money from a goy where he's paying Ribus, and now over time Ribus is going and eroding the value of what they have, because they're going to end up having to pay more and more. So then Beisdin will get involved, and they will sell off property of the yesomim in order to pay off the debt before the ribis gets to huge proportions. So that's Rabbi Yehuda says that in the name of Rav Asi. Rabbi Yochanan Amar. Rabbi Yochanan agrees. Rabbi Yochanan agrees with that, and he mentions there's a couple of other cases as well. Yes, one example would be when there's a document against them, when there's an IOU against them that involves ribis, like we just said. But also, Rabbi Yochanan adds two other cases. One other case, Another example where Beistin will collect from property of Yesomim is in order to pay off a wife's ksuba, where there's a matter of mizonis involved, because as we've learned in ksubas, until the wife, now the wife could be their mother, of course, it could be a different wife, whatever. Anyway, she's entitled to collect her ksuba out of the estate, and until she collects that ksuba, she's entitled to mizonis. She's entitled to have the Yesomim support her. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says that there is another example where if we wait until the Yesomim are older, meanwhile all these years she's getting mizonis from them, and that's likely to cost them a significant amount. So therefore, Beistin will get involved, sell off some of their property, pay off her ksuba, and that way she goes and starts supporting herself, and that way the Yesomim are not losing out on an ongoing basis. Anyway, the point is that we see from that, therefore, that Rabbi Yochanan is saying only when there's a potential loss to the Yesomim, only then do we get involved with selling property of theirs. But here we're not talking about that. So how can Rabbi Yochanan be saying that we collect from the aliyah of the Yesomim? So the Gemara says, Epoch. Okay, so you have to flip around the opinions. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Me'aliyas HaPetrupsin, Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina Amar Me'aliyas Yesomim. So you're going to say the other way around. Rabbi Yochanan is the one who says you collect from the HaPetrupsin. Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina is going to say you collect from the Yesomim. And that way there's no contradiction between the two statements of Rabbi Yochanan. Now Tosfos actually brings up the point that even Rabbi Yochanan is only talking about a debt that was taken out by their father. Then we're saying that only in certain limited cases do we do that. But here we're talking about a debt that came from the Yesomim themselves, because after all, it's their ox that gored. So why is the Gemara assuming that there's a problem involved? And so Tosfos discusses some details about that Rabbi Yochanan himself holds. We find in a different Gemara, Prias Baal Choyv Mitzvah, that to pay off a Baal Choyv is a mitzvah, and we can say Rabbi Yochanan himself points out elsewhere that Rabbi Yochanan holds that Yesomim being Ketanim are not yet Chayev in mitzvahs, so then that would apply equally well whether we're talking about their own debt or something from their father. If we flip around the opinions, then we can take that into consideration, and we can say if we don't flip around the opinions, then we can say that Rabbi Yochanan at least is being consistent as far as that. But if we flip around the opinions, and Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina is saying that you do collect from Yesomim, then you could argue that maybe this Prias Baal Choyv mitzvah, and that the Yesomim are not bnei mitzvah, maybe that only applies to their father's debts. We don't necessarily find that he would say it applies to their debts, which leads to the Gemara's question. If you're telling me we flip around the opinion, Amar Rava, Mishum de Kasha de Rabbi Yochanan, Abde Rabbi Yochanan, Mishabes le Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina Toya, what are you telling me? Just because you have two opinions of Rabbi, two statements of Rabbi Yochanan that contradict one another, therefore you're going to say Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina says you collect from Yesomim, and you're going to make him, in effect, you're going to say that he's making a mistake in halacha. The fact is, again, you don't collect from Yesomim where, as we just said, you don't collect from Yesomim where they're not going to suffer a loss if you delay things. Ordinarily, we tell any Baal Choyv or anything like that, I'm sorry, these guys are Yesomim, you're going to have to wait until they're older to collect. Again, because you do have that consideration that Yesomim, as Tosfos points out, that Yesomim lav b'nei mitzvah, you know, that Yesomim are not subject to mitzvahs to the extent that we should say that they have the mitzvah to pay off that chayv. We'll tell the other person, we'll tell the Baal Din, you're going to have to wait until they're older, and then you're going to have to collect. Anyway, the point is, if you're going to tell me that Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina is saying that you collect from Yesomim, then that contradicts that point. And you're going to say Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina is making a mistake. Well, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina Dayanahu. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina himself served as a dayan. The nochus lo unke de dinner. he goes down into, he delves into the depths of the din and then and figures out what the actual halacha should be. So it's not logical to say. So we have a problem either way, it sounds like. On the one hand, we're going to say that Rabbi Yochanan seems to be contradicting himself. We're going to have to draw a distinction between Rabbi Yochanan. But if you flip it around, says Rava, that makes things worse, because now you're saying that Rabbi Yosef Chanina doesn't even know this din, that you don't collect from Yisraelim unless the situation is that they're otherwise going to lose out. And the fact is that's a well established halacha that they shouldn't need to do that. So what's going on over here? Ela la'olam lo tepuch. So the answer is no. In fact, you shouldn't flip them around. Umazik shayni. It's different when it's a case when their ox was mazik. Yes, Rabbi Yochanan usually says that you don't collect from nichsi yisomim unless they're losing out. For example, ribis or mizonis for the wife. For the Amana, but here, Rabbi Yochanan is going to say that where their nechosim are causing a hezek to somebody else, then Rabbi Yochanan is going to say that yes, in that case, we are going to make an exception and collect from them because yeah, that's going to mean that they have a responsibility or they're going to have to make sure somehow that their shur is not going to go and cause damage. So now we can understand. So now that we don't, now that we're not flipping around the opinions, now we can say we can understand the basis of the machlokes. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Me'aliyas Yisoimim. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan is going to say you collect from the Yisoimim. De'iyamet Me'aliyas Apotropos. Rabbi Yochanan says if you're going to say that instead you collect from the Apotropos, Mimni Ivaloi Avdi, what's going to happen is people are going to hold themselves back. A person is going to say, why should I bother becoming an apotropos when I'm going to be on the hook? Well, I could end up being on the hook for a large amount of money. Now Tosfos points out a number of details in this regard. One of them being, we learned to in Gittin, we had a whole sugya about apotropsin. One thing we mentioned over there was what we were learning about before, that for example that the apotropos is given an expense account and he's able to charge some of his expenses to the nechosim of the yisomim when he's doing things on their behalf, like for example buying himself new clothes so that when he transacts business on their behalf, he looks respectable and people will listen to him. So yes, we do have all of that. At the end, actually, we make him take a shvua, we learned over there, that he didn't keep any money of the assignment that he wasn't supposed to. So the truth is, first of all, Tosfos discusses that now over there, we don't make them take a shvua that they weren't careless with it. So Tosfos discusses over here, we may be talking about that the apotropos was actually careless. He was actually pesheya. How is it that this animal has caused damage multiple times and each time he's been warned and nevertheless it still went out and caused damage? Means that he was pesheya, means that he wasn't so careful, he wasn't as careful as he should have been with the animal. Which we're going to see further on the further down on Omid Beis, we're going to talk about a case where the apotropos was careful but not careful enough. Anyway, here Tosfos starts by saying, brings from Avinu Chaim, that even if they were according to Rabbi Yochanan, we're saying we're collecting from the Yisomim, then that would mean, in other words, so we're not being mechayev of the apotropos even if he was careless. As far as over there, when we make him swear, is not so much that he was not so much that he wasn't careless, but that he didn't keep anything that he was supposed to. On the other hand, Tosfos then goes on to discuss that maybe not, maybe he is chayev if he was pesheya. One thing is, Tosfos mentions in this connection is it's one thing when he was appointed as a general apotropos, then he's not going to hold himself back from doing that just because they're going to make him swear. But over here, we're talking about he's being appointed an apotropos only for this one limited, thing of watching the shur. Then he's going to figure, according to Rabbi Yochanan, if you make him pay, then he's going to say, why am I bothering in the first place? It's one thing when they honor me and they respect me and they trust me enough to make me a general apotropos, but not necessarily just for this purpose. After all, Tosfos points out this, that he's being appointed is not even really for the benefit of the Yesomim. The Yesomim would be better off if there was no apotropos at all, and the ox will continue to be tam forever. It's actually for the benefit of society, so of everybody else around there, so that this ox doesn't continue causing damage. So therefore, so Rabbi Yochanan figures if you're going to put him on the hook to pay, then he's going to say, I don't want to take the job in the first place. Rabbi Yosef of Chanina Omar, Me'aliyas Apotropos. On the other hand, Rabbi Yosef of Chanina says, you do collect from the property of that Apotropos. Fine. All it doesn't mean you collect from him permanently. It means that he lays it out. When the Yosemim become older, then he'll be able to collect back from them. So Rabbi Yosef of Chanina would agree. It's true. If you're going to put him on the hook for it forever, then he's going to be, then he's not going to want to accept the job in the first place. But so what we're saying is he has, when they become b'nei mitzvah, when they become older, then he'll be able to go and recollect it from them. Again, we did mention before the Yafei Enayim says that brings from the Yerushalmi that understands Rabbi Yosef of Chanina not like that, that understands him to be saying that no, the apotropos pays and he doesn't have any recourse to collect from them. There is also here Tosfos is saying that even if he was Peshea, he's still going to be able to collect from. He's still even appointed Rabbi Yosef of Chanina. He'll be able to eventually collect from the Yesomim. On the other hand, the Nemuka Yosef says that not. There'd be a difference if he was Peshea. If he really was careless, then he's not going to be able to collect from the Yesomim. Only if it's just, as we're going to learn later on the Amud, there can be a difference where he did guard it, but not carefully enough, which is not really considered a Peshea. Then we would say that Rabbi Yochanan would say you can collect directly from the Yesomim, and Rabbi Yosef of Chanina would say that he can collect from them indirectly. So the Gemara says, you should know that actually, so what have we been saying all this time? That the apotropos of our Mishnah is not being appointed in order to collect when the animal is attacked. The purpose of it is only for ha'adah, only for the warning that each time the animal causes damage, we warn the apotropos to be careful and take care of the animal better. And if not, then eventually it's going to become a mord. But we were saying that the animal that to collect from it while it's a tam, that's never going to happen as long as the owner is a cheder shoyt of a cotton. So now the Gemara points out, not everybody agrees to that. This point is actually subject to a machlokas tanoi. The Tanya, we learn in a brisa, if you have a shur whose owner became a cheresh or a shoyta, or where the owner went overseas, and again, you need somebody to be looking after the animal. By the way, the Gemara tells us in the Shittim Kubetzis points out that there's a Gemara in Bava Metzia in Hamafkid that mentions a case where a person went off to Medina Sayam, and the Gemara discusses over there. You don't generally set up an apotropos to oversee his property, because it's one thing for Yesomim, people will be willing to take on the job of apotropos because they know it's a mitzvah, but for a grown man who went overseas on his own, not necessarily are people going to be willing to take on the job in the first place. But here again, we're not talking about to oversee his property in general. We're talking about for this one specific purpose of guarding the animal and preventing it from being mazik. So then we're going to find somebody who will take on that job of apotropos. And yeah, to address what was mentioned before, maybe in fact, Beis Din would find that it's necessary to pay him a salary for that. But even so, it's still a responsibility, and he may end up being on the hook for it. So anyway, so what happens over here as far as this apotropos? Yehuda ben Nekusa Omar Sumchus. So Yehuda ben Nekusa says in the name of Sumchus, what happens is Hareyu b'tamusay ad hi idubay b'fnei abaylim. The animal remains a tam until they actually warn it in front of the owner. Now here they can't warn in front of the owner in the sense that the owner himself is either out of town or is a cheresh or shoyta, and therefore warning in his presence is not considered to be a valid warning. When we say befanav, what we mean is that he's actually cognizant. He's a bald, he's a ben das, and you're able to and he's able to understand the warning, and here he's not. So therefore, Yehuda ben Nekusa is telling us that the animal is going to always remain a tam. you appoint an apotropos, we appoint an apotropos and we give the address in front of the apotropos, and that'll be enough eventually to make it a mord. And then if eventually the cheresh becomes is able to hear or to speak again, and the shoter becomes normal, or the child grows up, or the owner comes from overseas, so comes back from his trip. So now Yehuda ben Nekusa Omar Sumchus Chozel Tamusa. So Yehuda ben Nekusa says that now the ox goes back to being a tam. Now we have to figure out, what do you mean goes back to being a tam? We just said, according to Sumchus, we said it never becomes a mord in the first place. So that's what we're going to have to figure out. Anyway, so it goes back to being tam. Adchi Idrba b'fnei Bailim, unless they give the edus in front of the owner. It became a mord at some point, as we're going to see. And now when the owner comes, then it goes back to being a tam because again, shinu reshus, like we said before, changed reshus, and therefore that would be a reason to say, like Reb Meir had said in our Mishnah, Sumchus in particular, Sumchus is a Talmud of Reb Meir, so he's going according to his Rebbe's Shitta. That even such a change of ownership from apotropos back to the actual owner is considered a shinu reshus. Now there is a bit of discussion over here. We learned earlier in the Masechta, what is the purpose of the three warnings? Is it le'yaude Torah to establish that this sure is dangerous, or the le'yaude Gabra to tell the person this animal is dangerous and you better be watching it? If we say that it's le'yaude, then it would have to be that first it gored three times when it was when the apotropos was taking care of it. It wouldn't be enough that it did some of it before the apotropos took over, because then you don't have the yode, then you have the yode gavra. The braisa has two machlokes in it. One about what happens, does the animal remain a tam, or can it ever become mord? So Yehuda ben Nekusa had said that it always stays tam. The Chum had said you set up an apotropos and you testify in front of it. Then we had, what if the child grows up, or the cheresh becomes normal again or whatever? Then we said Rabbi Yehuda ben Nekusa is saying that it goes back to being tam, and Rabbi Yossi says it remains mord. So let's figure out. So now the Bnei HaYeshiva were saying when they discussed this braisa, my harehu b'tamusid k'amas sumchus. What does sumchus mean when he says at the beginning of the braisa? He says that in this case it stays tam. Ilema d'leim yad klal. Do you mean that it doesn't become a mord at all? Can't be. Hamid katani sefer chozel tamusay. Since the braisa continues that when the cheresh becomes normal again, or whatever, then the animal goes back to being tam, miklal diyayid. Obviously, that means that at some point there was the hadah, it did become a mu'ad, because otherwise you can't speak about it going back to being a tam. Ela, my harehu b'tamusay, harehu b'tmimusay. So we have to understand, when Sumchus uses the expression harehu b'tamusay, what he really means is that the animal, not that the animal always remains tam. Sumchus is going to agree that eventually the animal is going to become mord. What we mean is harehu b'tmimusay. What he means is it remains in its completion, in the sense that we don't collect anything from the owner on its behalf. D'loy machasrinan blei, we don't reduce any of its value by giving some of it to the nizik. Here we had before that, for example, if the shur caused $100 worth of damage, we're going to say $100 worth of the shur now belongs to the nizik. We're not going to say that in the case of the yisoimim, and then in these cases of cheder shur to bekatan, we're going to say the entire animal continues to belong to them. Therefore, we see that Sumchus is saying, now, what does it mean that we don't set up an apotropos? It means we don't set up an apotropos as far as collecting the chatzi nezik for a tam. So that would be exactly like Reb Meir and our Mishnah, that you don't collect from the migufoy of the tam at all, as long as the owner is a cheder shor to the katan. And then then when the Chacham say we appoint an apotropos and we testify in front of that, now it's not that we have to, it's not that we need that in order to make him a mu'ah. That already Sumchos is agreeing to as well. So the Chacham have no reason to disagree. Obviously, it means that they were collecting from it. Alma ma'amidin apotropos latam libus megufay, showing obviously that the Chachamim hold in this braisa that you do arrange an apotropos to collect megufay. So not just in order to make the, and not just in order to give the repeated warnings and eventually make the animal moored, but rather we're saying even to even to actually collect from the animal while it's attacked. So on the face of it, it comes out that our Mishnah is like Sumchus. In turn, Sumchus being a Talmud of Reb Meir, then that would fit with the fact that the Tanakhama of our Mishnah is Reb Meir. So, with that said, there are other Mephoshim who explain that maybe our Mishnah, we're distinguishing between the goring that it did before the apotropos came into the picture versus afterwards. In any case, the point is that that's Sumchus's opinion. So we see therefore that Sumchus and the Chachamim are arguing about that point. Does a tam belong to a cheres shor to b'kadon ever pay according to Sumchus? No, and according to the Chachamim, yes. Okay, what about the sefer b'mayikum miflegi? What about on the sefer where we're talking about the animal going back to being a tam or not going back to being a tam? What's the point of their machloikas? What's the underlying logic of their machloikas? Now this we actually had in the Mishnah as well. The Shulchan Aruch Betzis points out, but once we quoted the Braisa, the Gemara may as well discuss it in connection with the Braisa. Anyway, so the Sefer b'mayikum miflegi. So what is the Svara in the Sefer? So the Svara is Meshus Meshani Ikabinayo. The question is, does the change of Meshus cause a change of din, like we discussed before? Sumchus savor reshus mishana, Rabbi Yosi savor reshus ani mishana. Sumchus holds the change of reshus makes a difference for any of the reasons that we said before, whether like Rashi because of technicality, because now the hadar can't be transferred from one person to another, or like the Meiri says, because as a natural thing, now that the animal is under different ownership, then it's likely to behave differently. So Sumchus holds of that. Rabbi Yosi savor reshus ani mishana. Rabbi Yosi does not hold of that, and so therefore he says that it retains the same status as before. Again, later on in the Gemara, we're going to learn primarily tomorrow. We're going to talk about this matter of reshus mishana. In the end, the halacha is reshus mishana. But when it comes to this case of the cheres shor to b'katan and their apotropos, there the halacha is not like that because the difference is that there it basically is under the same ownership. It's only that right now that person is not capable of taking care of it, and he's not able to take care of it. But it still is the same ownership, and therefore it's not considered reshus mishana. But basically the halacha is reshus mishana, which we'll deal with tomorrow, Best Hashem. As far as who the halacha is like in this machlokas of Sumchus and the Chachamim, many Rishonim learn the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi, as it usually is. On the other hand, if we say that our Mishnah goes like Sumchus, then maybe that means the halacha is like him. So the Gemara continues. Tanan Rabbanon. If a shur belonging to a cheres shor to b'katan gourd, Reb Yaakov meshalem chatzi nezek. Reb Yaakov pays chatzi nezek. So the Gemara says, Reb Yaakov mayavite. What do you mean? Why is Reb Yaakov paying? His ox didn't do anything. Ella ema Reb Yaakov oimer meshalem chatzi nezek. Rather, what the Braisa means is that Reb Yaakov says that the cheres shor to b'katan would have to pay chatzin ezek. An interesting point in this regard is that so why does the Gemara, why does the Braisa use such a strange Lashon then, and why does the Gemara even need to ask about it? Isn't it obvious that Rabbi Yaakov himself is not personally paying? So on a Nigladika level, Rabbi Yaakov Emden says over here that very simple, Rabbi Yaakov was the head of a Beis Din, and Beis Din is Avihem Shor Yisoyim, as we've learned before. They're responsible to take care of all matters involving Yisoyim. And therefore, yes, literally, Rabbi Yaakov is paying in the sense that he's going to actually be paying out on behalf of the Yisoyimim, as though he was their apotropos. And then, as we discussed before, is he eventually going to be reimbursed by the Yisoyimim? And that was subject to the discussion before of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yosef ben Chanin. On a deeper level, there's a sefer called Shomer Amunim, an early sefer of Kabbalah, that mentions this is an example where we see that there's tremendous depth in Torah, where we see that this tremendous Kabbalistic depth in Torah, where even you have the Braisa will use a strange expression like that in order to hint to something higher. He doesn't say what that something higher is. So Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, briefly mentions it in one place in his writings, and mentions that apparently there may be some kind of connection with the fact that, like we say in the pasuk, by Yovah Yaakov Shalem, that Yaakov came whole. As we know, he came whole. He wasn't affected. He wasn't affected negatively by all this time by Lavan. He was healed from his limp, etc. So therefore, Rabbi Yaakov Mishalem, therefore, would somehow relate to that. Although again, he doesn't really elaborate on that. The Ponim Yofos, actually, the Ponim Yofos, the Baal HaFlah, at the end of Parashas Vayishlach, gives a very interesting explanation. Also, Al Pi Kabbalah, he says, the gist of it is that you have the famous Timna, who wanted to become a Giyotis, and then instead she ended up becoming a Pelegish of Eliphaz. So he explains, by analyzing her name and by analyzing the names of some of the other people mentioned in that story over there, that Yaakov was able to be Mavarer half of her, but not the other half, and therefore Rabbi Yaakov Mishalim, because of that, he says the result of that is that half that Yaakov was not able to be Mavarer causes tremendous trouble to the Jewish people in later generations. Timna's son with Eliphaz, after all, was Amalek. So therefore, we're saying Rabbi Yaakov Mishalem, hinting to the fact that Yaakov already accomplished half of what he was supposed to, but half is not enough, and we need him to accomplish the other half in order to break the power of Timna and of Amalek once and for all. So that's an example. So all of that is an example how the Gemara will use a very seemingly strange expression, and there's great depth to it of what the Chachamim are hinting at. So the Gemara asks, "B'maya skinan? What exactly is the scenario over here where we're saying again this ox of a cheder short of a cotton? Rabbi Yaakov is saying that you pay chatzi nezek. Why chatzi nezek? E b'tam pshita. If you're talking about that the animal is a tam, then of course it's chatzi nezek. Dekula almanami chatzi nezek u demashalim. And if the ox belonged to anybody else, it still wouldn't be more than chatzi nezek. The e b'muad." And if you're talking about the animal was a mord, then what's going on? Ida abdile shmira. If the apotropos was guarding the animal properly, and there was an onus, and let's say, for example, the wall fell down or something, and the shor went out, klal klal le boi le shalomi. Then the din is a person has potter completely from paying. The idolai abdile shmira. And if they didn't do shmira, kula nezek boi shalomi. Then it's a mord. You'd have to pay nezek shalom. So what is the case where it's chatzin nezek? And Tosfos points out, now it can't just mean that Ma'amidin Apotropos, because why would the Braisa then, why would Rabbi Yaakov have to say anything about Chatzin Nezek then? It would be enough to say Rabbi Yaakov Mechayev, and we'd understand Mechayev in the usual way, Chatzin Nezek for a Tam, Nezek for Nezek Sholim for a Mu'ad. So it has to be that there's something more than here that we're talking about, even though it's not so much a chiddush that we set up an apotropos, but rather there's a chiddush where there's a certain case over here where that apotropos is paying only chatzi nezek, even though we would have expected him to pay nezek shalim. So what is that case? So Amar Rava la'olam b'mu'ad. In fact, we are talking about a mu'ad. V'hacha ma'yaskinan de'avdi shmira p'chusa v'lay avdi le'shmira ma'ula. Because we're talking about a case where the apotropos was guarding the animal, but only a shmira p'chusa, only a lesser degree of shmira. So Rashi gives the example, as we're going to have later on in the Masechta. For example, he closed it with a door that's able to withstand the ruach metzuya. So the, you have a door of the barn which is able to stand when you which is able to stand in a normal wind. So that would be considered karoi. However, it's a shmirah p'chusa in the sense what happens if a hurricane comes and rips off the door, then that's that. So it's not, so it's only a shmirah p'chusa, it's not a shmirah ma'ula. Now, so the point is like this. The point is like this. At the end of our perek, we're going to have a machloikus when it comes to now by a mord, the expression in the pasuk is v'lo yishmerenu ba'olam, that a person is chayev when his animal is a mord and the owner did not guard the animal. So now, does that imply that? So that implies we're going to learn later on in the perek the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that says that implies by a mord, as long as you did some kind of shmira, then you're potter if it went out and caused damage. Because at least you did the bare minimum of shmira. Now we're going to learn at the end of the parak. There's a machlokas about that. Is he potter? Is he chayev nezek sholim? So now what we're saying is that Rav Yaakov savolak Rav Yehuda de Omar sad tamus bim koyma imedes. Now Rav Yaakov holds like Rav Yehuda in two ways. First of all, Rav Yaakov holds that even when the animal becomes a mu'ud, it doesn't mean we take away the fact that it was a tam. It means that it was a tam and it remains still a tam with the mu'ud thing tacked on top of that. So therefore, so the dinim of a tam still apply. The Savalak Rabbi Yehuda, Da'ama Mu'ud, Sagile, Bishmira Pchusa, and he also holds like Rabbi Yehuda, who says that when it comes to a Mu'ud, it's enough to do a Shmira Pchusa that Rabbi Yehuda holds, as we're going to learn at the end of the Perek, that when it comes to a Tam, you need Shmira Ma'ula, you need a stronger kind of Shmira. So in this case, for example, you would need a kind of door that will withstand even a hurricane, but for a Mu'ud, you don't need that. Because the pasuk says v'lo yishmiranu ba'olav, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying, therefore, that implies that by a mord, any kind of shmira is enough to pater you from being a mord. So now, what happens is, therefore, so Rabbi Yaakov is going to say like this. So the animal is a mord now, therefore, shmira p'chusa is enough. On the other hand, the animal still has an aspect of being a tam. That aspect didn't go away because it's a mord. So therefore, so if he didn't do shmira ma'ula, he's still chayev for chatzi nezek, just as if it was still a tam. So therefore, that's why he's going to say chatzi nezek. Now, in this case, where we're talking about an ox that belongs to cheres shoyt of a cotton, then we have an additional factor. And also, then Rabbi Yaakov would hold like the chachamim in the machlokas that we just had between them and Sumchus, that we would say that we do arrange an apotropos, and that apotropos is also under his guardianship. We're going to be collecting the chatzin nezek for a tam. So now the Pnei Yeshua points out that the chiddush then is that again we're not going to say that we don't want to discourage him from being an apotropos, and therefore maybe we should pater him at all. So therefore, Rabbi Yaakov is saying that not like that. We still do demand that he pay the chatzin nezek, and then like we said before, then we could say that maybe that later on when the yisayim become older, he can recollect it from them. Anyway, so that would explain. So Rava says that explains Rabbi Yaakov's chatzi nezek, because we're saying, in effect, what we're saying is, even though the animal is a mu'ud, to this extent, we're still treating it like a tam because he did shmira p'chusa. So the Gemara says, so now that requires us to say, though, that Rabbi Yaakov holds like Rabbi Yehuda in two things. Number one, that it's enough for a mu'ud to do shmira p'chusa, and number two, that sad tamus bim koyma imedes, that the animal still retains an aspect of being a tam. But Omale Abaya, v'loy pligi. So Abaya says, are you telling me then that Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda are not actually arguing? We learn in another braise, a shur shall chera shirt of a cotton shenagach. If a shur belonged to a chera shirt of a cotton gourd, Rabbi Yehuda machayev, Rabbi Yehuda says he's chayev to pay, Rabbi Yaakov, which implies nezek shalim, Rabbi Yaakov, chatzi nezek hu dumashalim, and Rabbi Yaakov is saying you only pay chatzi nezek. So then you can't say that they agree with each other. So the answer is Omer Rav Ba'ula, Mash Machayev Rabbi Yehuda Pirush Rabbi Yaakov. It still doesn't mean they're arguing. When it says Rabbi Yehuda Machayev, doesn't mean he's Chayev Chatzin Ezek. Rabbi Yehuda says he's Chayev. Rabbi Yehuda is not specifying what that Chayev is. So now Rabbi Yaakov comes and tells us the mechayev is that he's mechayev chatzin nezek. So the Gemara says, well, Abaya de Oma Pligi. Well, okay, so according to Rava and according to Rav about Ula, then there's no argument. So we say that Rabbi Yaakov holds like Rabbi Yehuda. According to Abaya, who says they are in fact arguing, the Mai Pligi, what is the svara behind their machlokas? Why, in the case of a tam over here? So Rashi points out, if you're talking about a tam, then how is Rabbi Yehuda saying nezek shalim? And tam is always only chatzin nezek. And if it's muad and he did shmirah pchusa, then Rabbi Yehuda also is going to say that even forget about a cheder shor to pekatan, even a pikeach shor is going to be paying only chatzin nezek, because again he's going to say sad tamus bemkoyma emedes, the aspect that's a tam still remains in effect. We just don't apply the aspect of a muad because he did watch it. So therefore, he still stays at chatzin nezek. So why would Rabbi Yehuda be saying, so according to Rava and according to Rav Ba'ula, who says that Rabbi Yehuda agrees you're paying only chatzin nezek, he just hadn't specified, then fine. But according to Abaya, who says that Rabbi Yehuda actually holds you pay nezek shalim, so what's the scenario over here that he would be paying nezek shalom according to Rabbi Yehuda? And if he didn't guard it at all, then Rabbi Yaakov should agree that he's paying nezek shalom if it's a muad, and why is he saying only chatzin nezek? So the answer is amalach. So the answer is, Abaya will answer, muad v'lein natre klal. We're talking about the animal is a muad, and he didn't watch it at all. He didn't even do shmir pchosa. So now Rabbi Yaakov savalak Rabbi Yehuda b'chada or poligale b'chada. So now we can say, unlike in Rava's answer before, where we said Rabbi Yaakov agrees with Rabbi Yehuda on two things, now we can say he agrees with him on one thing and disagrees on the other. Savalak Rabbi Yehuda b'chada, he agrees with Rabbi Yehuda in one thing. The either Rabbi Yehuda savat sad tamas from koyma emedes. Rabbi Yehuda holds that the muad still retains the aspect of a tam, and therefore the dinim that applied to a tam before are going to continue to apply. So Rabbi Yaakov agrees with that. Or polagale b'chada, but he's disagreeing on another point. Either Rabbi Yehuda savamamidin lahan apotropos latam ligvus migufay. Rabbi Yehuda is going to hold that you set up an apotropos, that you do arrange an apotropos to collect for a tam from gufay. Rabbi Yaakov savah ein mamidin. Rabbi Yaakov would hold like sumchus before that you don't do that, and therefore v'loy mishalom ala pauga demur. Therefore Rabbi Yaakov is going to say, you can't collect the half that would be for the tam. You're only going to collect the new half that comes as a result of the animal being a muad. So he would say, in other words, that the part that it's a tam were potter, not because the part that he's a tam is potter, nothing to do with the shmira. We're talking about he did do shmira pusa, but we're talking about that. We're talking about he didn't do shmira at all. But the tam part he's potter from, because Rabbi Yaakov holds like sumchus before that you never collect from a tam belonging to cheder shor to pekatan. On the other hand, now we have it's a muad. He's going to agree with Rabbi Yehuda that a muad means is a tam plus, meaning in other words, we take whatever rule applied to the tam and continue to apply it to the muad, and then on top of that, we have the special dinim of a muad. Well, by a muad, we don't have this concept that we don't collect from Yisoymin, because there we're not collecting from the shur itself, there we're collecting from min aliyah, and there we have the machlokas before of Rabbi Yechanan and Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina, whether we collect from the Yisoymin's aliyah or from the apotropuses. So that half, says Rabbi Yaakov, we can collect. So therefore, that's why he's saying you're paying only half, only the half that was added by virtue of the animal becoming a muad. Tosfos points out, Rava doesn't like that explanation, because then it should have said clearly that Rabbi Yehuda says Yuchayev Nezek Shalom and Rabbi Yaakov says Chatzi Nezek. And also, if we're saying that he didn't guard the animal at all, then Rabbi Yaakov should be saying Ein Meshalom Ela Chatzi Nezek. The Chiddush would be, even though you'd think he's Chayev Nezek Shalom, nevertheless the Chiddush is he's paying only Chatzi Nezek. So for that and some other reasons, Tosfos explains Rava doesn't like this answer of Abaya. And he therefore has to understand Rabbi Yaakov differently, that Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda are not actually arguing. Rather, Rabbi Yehuda is saying Mechayev, and Rabbi Yaakov is clarifying what is that Mechayev? Chatzin Nezek. So now we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and we'll deal with more about this machlokas of Abaya and Rava and the understanding of Rabbi Yaakov and of the other Tanoim.